Welcome to this podcast from Rice Consulting. My name is Randy Rice, and I'm going to be your host on this short podcast today. It's been quite a while since I've issued one of these. I've been pretty busy, and with all the things going on in the past week, and especially the past month in terms of software quality, I really felt like it was time to do one of these, several stories, and also lessons learned from these. And you'll find that I'm not going to pull any punches in naming names in this podcast, because I think that's one of the things that holds people's feet to the fire when it comes to software quality. Well, many of you were impacted by the BlackBerry failure, and now we're learning that the shutdown on April 17th was related to a software upgrade that didn't go as planned, and also followed by a failover process that also didn't work properly. And it says, according to eWeek.com, that the BlackBerry blackout happened when the company introduced a new non-critical system routine into its database, officials said. The routine, according to RIM, was designed to improve cache optimization, but instead caused a series of interaction errors between the databases and the cache. They also quote that after isolating the resulting database problem and unsuccessfully attempting to correct it, RIM began its failover process to a backup system, company officials said in a statement. Officials said that the company had repeatedly tested the failover process successfully, but this time something went wrong. And so the story goes on, and you can go out and read it at eWeek.com, and I'm also linking it to our recent newsletter that we're going to be putting out here in just the next day or so. But the idea that it was a non-critical system routine, well, I guess people found out really truly how critical sometimes non-critical things can be. Now, I do kind of have to take exception to the person in the eWeek.com article, Jack Gold, who says that he can't fault them too much because it happens to everyone, and I'm inclined to cut them a break here because they didn't do anything they thought would adversely affect the systems, he said. What it sounded like they were doing was putting some code into the system that would make it more efficient. Well, the point of exception is that a lot of times these things do happen. We all make mistakes, and they tend to happen on doing things that are not biggies. They're little things that are put into place, and I kind of take the opposite view. I can or would be inclined to fault them, because these are things that can be prevented. It's the little things that require testing just as well as it is the big things. And you know, like I say, we all make mistakes, but at the same time, the criticality of things like this really does put it into a different league of its own. So I'll leave it up to you to draw your own conclusions on that, but if you were impacted, you probably weren't cutting a much of a break either. And of course, TurboTax, they've had some big hits during the tax season as well. Two biggies with them. One was a performance issue. In fact, it was such a thing that the IRS actually granted some extensions, a two-day extension to tax filers who weren't able to get their tax returns submitted using a TurboTax e-file system. But another thing that was perhaps even a bit more troubling broke on April 12th when a Nebraska woman found a security hole in TurboTax. She found a hole in the software, the online software, that let her access the returns of people with similar names to her own. She reported it to TurboTax, which called the hole a quirk, unquote, quote unquote. Now that's a new one. As you know, if you've listened to this podcast very much, or if you've read any of my articles, I really have a problem with people calling software defects, things like glitches and bugs sometimes, when they're trying to minimize the blow in the media. These things, to me, are truly critical, and to call them glitches and quirks and bugs, really, in my view, really undermines what we do in software quality. It takes the seriousness out of it. And, you know, being able to see other people's tax information, their return information, is really more than a quirk. I mean, I might call it an isolated incident, but still, if an average user of the software can find this stuff, just think about what the people who are really after the bad stuff can do here. So they call the hold a quirk and have since removed the offending quote-unquote feature, according to a news source there. Now, the TurboTax customer had attempted to access some past filings, and the route she took online opened some returns for several others with the same last name but different initials. And so they're not revealing exactly who it was. They don't want people to be able to repeat this. And so it was a mistake on the woman's part, not a hacking incident. And so she wanted to make sure that that was clear too. Now we get into kind of the realm of the egregious at this point. This story broke on April 2nd of 2007 that Radio Shack Corporation dumped thousands of customer records behind a store near a Corpus Christi location, exposing the customers to possible identity theft, according to the Texas Attorney General. They also said that that act violated multiple state statutes, according to a 2005 law that would require businesses to protect and properly dispose of customer personal information. And so the state investigators followed up on the report that the Portland, Texas Radio Shack store dumped the records and receipts in a dumpster behind the store around March 21st. And those records contain social security numbers, credit and debit card information, names, addresses, and telephone numbers of customers. Well, Radio Shack said that it was a one-time incident, that store is part of a shredding program that they had in place for secure documents. It was all part of a isolated incident of a one-time incident related to a particular store worker. However, under the state's identity theft law, Radio Shack could face fines of $500 for each abandoned record that had been done in that manner. Well, but the story doesn't end there, because at the same time going on in Texas was an effort to make clerks exempt from privacy laws, in fact make the state exempt, that they could disclose in the ordinary course of business social security numbers contained in documents held by their offices. And it went through the House in Texas, and it was signed into law by the governor on April 2nd. So basically, if you live in Texas, your social security numbers are no longer considered private protected data if they are held in public records by the state. And so that means they can be posted on websites and all kinds of places, and they're thinking that that law may trickle down to things that other people do as well. So it's kind of troubling stuff there on the security front we're hearing these days. Well, now this is kind of a dated interview, unfortunately, because of my procrastination of getting it out here, but we're going to go to a brief conversation that I had at the last Star East conference with James Whitaker at this point.
Well, this is Randy Rice. I'm here at Star East talking with James Whitaker, who just gave a great talk on security testing. And so one of the things, James, I'd like to ask you is, what do you see as maybe some of the big hurdles in companies that keep them from really addressing security the way that it probably should be? Because it seems like there are so many vulnerabilities that we see, so many stories in the news about loss of data and you know, people losing sensitive information or stealing sensitive information.
Well, you know, in the past, one of the things that we've seen are a lot of companies that don't like to talk about their security issues. They treat them as an embarrassment. They try to cover them up and hide them as best they can. And that's clearly a practice that's backfired, because it's contained the discussion of security to within company walls, and that's not a healthy thing for the industry. You know, what we're doing at Microsoft is number one, you know, being very vocal about the issues that we're facing as a company, the bugs that we're seeing, informing all the people that could potentially be hurt by that, you know, sharing that information with other companies and hoping also that other companies share their information with us so that a system-wide fix can be implemented as quickly as possible. And then, you know, continuing education. Companies need to invest in security education. It's not acceptable for a single developer or a single tester to somehow avoid, you know, the entire educational area around security. You know, these are the most important, most devastating bugs that we're dealing with. So it requires openness. It requires a lot of communication, both within the company and outside the company. You know, everybody needs to understand these bugs, how they were found, how they were fixed, and then you know, continuous ongoing education. You've got to pay attention to your bugs, because those are the mistakes that you're making and need to be fixed.
Great. And I remember reading some of Kevin Mitnick's books on the social engineering kind of thing. And so do you think the education should extend to everyone, even the person answering the phone?
Well, certainly. You know, anyone who has access to your company's network needs to be aware of social engineering and how it's played out. You know, there was a experiment they did, I believe it was in New York City, where on the streets they were offering people chocolate for their passwords, and then they'd go back and try these passwords and found out that a fair number of people were willing to give up their passwords for chocolate.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. So there's no doubt that from new employees at the time they're hired need to be taught about these things.
Absolutely. Well, you made an announcement here at the conference that you're going to be taking on a new role. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I've left academia and I've joined Microsoft as a security architect in the security engineering and communications department. So I'm going to be working alongside of, you know, the in-house experts they have, like Michael Howard, to help make Microsoft's products more secure, our customers' products more secure, and the entire ecosystem more secure. You know, my focus isn't going to be Microsoft. My focus is going to be the entire ecosystem, software ecosystem on the planet, and what better company to achieve that goal through than Microsoft.
Well, that's exciting news, and as a Microsoft user, it's welcome news to me as well, and I'm looking forward to seeing some really great things, and you know, I think they made a great choice.
All right, well, thanks.
And you. Well, thanks, James.
Well, we really do appreciate James Whitaker taking some time to speak with me at the STAR conference, and wish him all the best. Now, if you want some more information on security testing, obviously James's books are great. Breaking Software Security is a great book. There's also the Holodeck tool that you can get in the CD with that book. That's a really great tool to have in your toolkit. And also, at Rice Consulting, we have all kinds of articles out there on security testing. We also have a security testing course that really does a great job of building the bridge between information security and the testing of that. And it really puts a lot of things in place for you there. Also, on a totally unrelated issue of security, I just want to make mention on the podcast that coming up June 6th and 7th, I'm going to be in the Chicago area. So if any of you guys are out there and you're interested in either or both of root cause analysis or becoming an influential test team leader, I invite you to join me for 1 or 2 days in Chicago. We're going to be at one of the DePaul University locations. Up there, you'll find information about that on riceconsulting.com. You can register, pay all the whole nine yards right there on our website at riceconsulting.com. So anyway, I hope you come to the website and check us out. And thank you for listening to this podcast.